Warren. Welcome to those on the webcast. There's a little wintry in spots coming up today, a little icy on the road in places and so forth, but we got here and it seems to be quite nice. And it's kind of pleasant down in Angelica. We had just a little dusting of snow today. Well, I believe you're all familiar with the event in Exodus, where there was a great famine in Canaan, and Jacob was up there, and this famine was giving him a lot of trouble. So, because of the famine, Jacob, later called Israel, was forced to go down into Egypt, and where his son Joseph had a very prominent position in the government there. Thus, Jacob and his family had a very prestigious position in Egypt, and they were highly respected by Pharaoh and the Egyptians when they moved into Egypt. However, of course, in 400 years, this blessing gradually deteriorated into a position of slavery and oppression. And God called Moses and his brother Aaron to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. Sure, you're all familiar with that story. And God warned Moses, God warned Moses that Pharaoh would oppose letting them go. And that is told to us in Exodus 3:19. I'd like to read Exodus 3, verse 19 and 20, because this is God telling Moses about leading the Israelites out of Egypt. But I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not even by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in its midst. And after that, he will let you go. So God brought about a series of 10 plagues upon Egypt before Pharaoh finally let the Israelite nation go. So today I'd like to take a look at those plagues that God brought on Egypt before Pharaoh would let Israel go. These plagues were a definite affront to the many pagan gods that Egypt worshipped. And the first plague that was brought about was on the Nile River. And that plague on the river was also an insult to the Egyptian gods and the gods of that river. Now, the river Nile was a great blessing to Egypt. It provided water in a very dry desert land. Its floods fertilized the land of Egypt. And its waters provided food, the fish of the river. So the first plague was on that river, and that starts in Exodus chapter 7. Exodus 7 and verse 17. Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river with the rod that is in my hand, and they shall be turned to blood. And the fish that are in the river shall die. The river shall stink. The Egyptians will loathe to drink the water of the river. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, say unto Aaron, take your rod and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their streams, over their rivers, over their ponds, over all their pools of water, that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in buckets of wood and in pitchers of stone. And Moses and Aaron did so, just as the Lord commanded. So he lifted up the rod, struck the waters that were in the river, in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. The fish that were in the river died. the river stank, and the Egyptians could not drink the water of the river, so there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. And now this cut off a major food source of the Egyptians, the fish, as well, of course, as the drinking water. And this was an obvious affront to the Egyptian gods of the Nile River, such as Khnum. Khnum was a human figure with the head of an ox. If you've looked at a lot of pictures of Egyptian pictures, early ancient Egyptian pictures, you've probably seen these figures of men and women with different heads on them, and Khnum was a head of a bull. And he was believed to have created man from the clay of the river on his potter's wheel. Another god was Hekwet, I think it is. Hekwet was a human body with the head of a fish. Well, it looked like a fish. Actually, it was the head of a frog. And Hekwet was the god of fertility and the god of resurrection. So Hekwet with this head of a frog, frogs were worshipped. One history states that killing of a frog in Egypt was even punishable by death. Can you imagine that? So the next plague was the plague of frogs. So let's take a look at Exodus 8 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, "Go to Pharaoh and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, I will smite all your territory with frogs.'" So the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into your house, into your bedroom, on your bed, on your bed, into the houses of your servants, on your people, into your ovens, into your kneading bowls. So they were plagued with frogs. So can you imagine, you get ready for bed, you're walking across the floor and your bare feet at night, getting ready to get into bed, and squish, squish. You get into bed and put your feet down in the bed, and here's frogs wiggling around in the bed. And you roll over at night in the bed, squish again. You wake up in the middle of the night with something hopping across your face. So, and the frogs, it says they were in their ovens. So can you imagine, you get ready to bake your bread and you have to clean the frogs out of your ovens, in your bread dough, make sure there isn't one that hasn't snuck in your bread dough. Really a gross situation, wasn't it? Now, I grant you their ovens were different than ours today, but basically the principle still runs, is the same. And in verse 7 it says that the magicians appear to have created frogs also. But now if they were really miracle workers, wouldn't they have reduced the number of frogs instead of added to them? So Pharaoh appealed to Moses to remove the frogs. Verse 8:13. So the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courtyards, out of the fields. They gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. Now, can you imagine driving down through Buffalo and seeing piles of frogs on each street corner? And they are going to stink, aren't they? Dead frogs. You have quite a reek all through Buffalo. But Pharaoh hardened his heart and would not let Israel go. Verse 15. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not heed them, as the Lord had said. Continuing on in verse 16, the third plague comes about. So the Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch your rod, and strike the dust of the land, so that there may become lice throughout the land of Egypt." And they did so. For Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and struck the dust of the earth, and it became lice on man and beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout the land of Egypt. And lice have been a plague of mankind for many, many centuries. During the Civil War, lice was a problem with the soldiers. And same with the Revolutionary War, lice were a problem throughout history. So the Israelites, the Israelites suffered those first three plagues, but they were protected from the ensuing ones. We go to Exodus 21. And the fourth plague starts, Exodus 21. "Or else, if you will not," this is chapter 8, verse 21. "Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you, your servants, on your people, and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand." Now, we don't really know what kind of flies these were. I know I grew up in an old farmhouse, and we had cluster flies, and they became just a pain in the neck at times because they'd cluster around the window and fall and die. And we also lived down on the edge of a woods, so we have little deer flies at the couple weeks a year that come along, and they're not, they bite you, and they really itch when you... when they bite. So we have a few of those. But this was a plague of flies. And it is not told what type of flies they were, but Psalm 78 indicates that they may have been a very serious biting fly. And there was in Egypt a very intensive biting fly. So this may very likely have been what they were. So, we come on to the fifth plague, which is in Exodus 9, starting in verse 3. "Behold, the hand of the Lord will be on your cattle in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the oxen, and on the sheep, a very severe pestilence. And the Lord will make a difference between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so nothing shall die of all that belongs to the children of Israel." Now, Barnes' commentary says this was a very grievous, the King James calls this a murrain, or pestilence, is what it says in the New King James. It means a great mortality. Exactly expresses the meaning, a great mortality. This terrible visitation struck far more severely than the preceding, which had caused distress and suffering. It attacks the resources of the nation. Excuse me. So, verse 4 says, "And the Lord will make a difference between..." Yes, I read that, didn't I? "The Lord would make a difference." So this would have further depleted the food supply in Egypt. Now, the Egyptians did not eat their livestock. They tended to worship their animals. But it would have seriously reduced their food products, such as milk and cheese and butter and that type of food for them. Now the sixth plague was a very painful plague. The sixth plague is in Exodus 9, verse 8. So the Lord said to Moses, take yourself hands full of ashes from the furnace and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. And it will become fine dust in all the land of Egypt, and it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all of Egypt. And if you recall, boils are a very painful affliction. You'll recall that when Satan was let loose on Job, Satan plagued Job with boils. I've never had a boil, but I understand they are very painful. So we come on to plague number seven. Plague seven says in Exodus 9 and verse 18, behold, tomorrow about this time, I will cause a very heavy hail to rain down, such as has not been in Egypt since the founding until now. Therefore, send now, gather your livestock and all that you have in the field, for the hail shall come down on every man and every animal which is found in the field and is not brought into the home, and they shall die. He who feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock to flee into the houses. Not only would this kill more animals, it would totally destroy any crops or produce that were in the field. And once hail hits and the grain is beaten into the ground, it's just practically impossible to retrieve the grain. And, of course, the other produce would be totally destroyed. And then we come to the eighth plague. And that starts in chapter 10. And verse 4. When the locusts come. This is really going to finish things off. So, chapter 10 and verse 4. Or else if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I will bring locusts into your territory, and they shall cover the face of the earth, so that no one will be able to see the earth, and they shall eat the residue of what is left, which remains to you, from the hail, and they shall eat every tree which grows up for you out of the field. So by this time, the economy of Egypt must have been pretty well devastated. There could not have been anything left to eat in all of Egypt. And here Pharaoh was ready to beg for relief. In Exodus 10, verse 16, Pharaoh's asking for relief. So in Exodus 10, verse 16, then Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron in haste and said, I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Now, therefore, please forgive my sin only this once and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death. Well, Pharaoh's words were really very hollow, for just the next verse here in Exodus 20, the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go. So God brought the ninth plague on Egypt. And then, Exodus 10:21, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may be even felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward the heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. A darkness that could be felt for 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone raise from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. So the children of Israel were not affected by this. Now, the Egyptians worshiped the sun. The Egyptians had great fear of eclipses. Just seeing a shadow come across the sun from an eclipse panicked the Egyptians because they worshiped the sun. And this darkness would have been a direct insult to Pharaoh. Ra was the sun god. That was the principal god in Egypt. Ra was the god of the sun, and Ra was the god of sun and light. And the pharaohs claimed to be descended directly from Ra, the sun god. So they were gods, they were physical gods on earth in the light of the Egyptians. So in Exodus 11, this daylight, this dark, was a very devastating event to them. I don't think we can imagine what the fear of total darkness, the darkness that could be felt, must have been like. It must have created a panic in the people that worshiped the sun. And 3 days must have seemed like an eternity to them. And I'm sure some thought it was really going to be an eternity. So this darkness was a terrible panic for the people of Egypt. Exodus 11, verse 13, I thought was an interesting verse. Here we see God's strong hand working blessing the Israelites. Exodus 11, verse 3. And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. So I thought that was interesting that God gave that blessing to the Israelites, that Moses was highly looked up to by the Egyptians. Continuing on in verse 4 of chapter 11, we get into the final plague, which is the great one that we think about at Passover time. Verse 4, Moses said, thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of animals. Then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall it be like it again. So skipping on over to verse 12, chapter 12 and verse 12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. So the death of the firstborn would have been a reminder of Pharaoh's killing of the Israelites, the newborn infants, way back when Moses was put in the ark and on the river by his mother. It would be a reminder of that event. And it also points out the firstborn are special to God. Numbers 8, verse 17 says, "For all the firstborn of the children of Israel are mine, both man and beast. On the day that I smote every firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified them for myself." So God has set apart the firstborn. I'm sure that many of you are acquainted with the birth order studies that have been done, the theory and those theories. But there does seem to be quite a bit to that. World leaders are overwhelmingly seem to be firstborns. The majority of U.S. presidents were firstborns, especially during the time of war and the Reconstruction period after war. The presidents after the Revolution, we know Washington was the first president after the Revolution, but Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and John Quincy Adams, the first six presidents, they were all firstborns. During the Civil War, we have Lincoln and Grant, again, firstborns. World War I, you had Wilson, Harding, and Coolidge. They were all firstborns. World War II, Roosevelt and Truman, again, firstborns. And some of you may remember that picture at the of the conference at Yalta, where you had the three great national leaders sitting in a row. Quite a well-known picture. They had Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin, and again, all firstborns, as were, I might also mention, Hitler and Mussolini fall into that category too. So we know that God places the kings and the rulers of this world. He tells us so in Daniel 5:21 and other places. Daniel 5:21 says, "The Most High God rules all kingdoms on earth and chooses their kings." A few of these men appear to have known that they were destined by a higher power. And I think of Lincoln and Churchill. Lincoln was one of only three presidents that did not profess a formal religion. But we know that Lincoln certainly believed in a God and a creator being. Because in many of his writings and many of his speeches, he mentioned a God. Especially one I recall was his second inaugural speech. In his second inaugural speech, he mentions the prayers of the South and the prayers of the North were different. They couldn't both be answered by God, but he did feel that the end result of the war was determined by God. And he mentioned that in his second inaugural speech. So, why is the firstborn so important to God? Well, he sent his firstborn son, his only son, that we can have salvation. Christ is the firstborn, our elder brother. Christ is our firstborn elder brother. Romans 8:29, I'd like to turn to Romans 8:29. the other side of my Bible. For whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. So to conclude today, I'd like to turn to Psalm 78. And I'd like to read Psalm 78, starting in verse 43, as my conclusion and as a review of the plagues. Psalm 78. And verse 43. When he worked his signs in Egypt and his wonders in the field of Zoan, turned their rivers to blood and their streams that they could not drink. He sent swarms of flies among them which devoured them, and frogs which destroyed them. He also gave their crops to the caterpillar, and their labor to the locust. He destroyed their vines with hail, and their sycamore trees with frost. He also gave up their cattle to the hail, and their flocks to fiery lightning. And he cast on them the fierceness of his anger, wrath, indignation, and trouble, by sending angels of destruction among them. He made a path for his anger. He did not spare their soul from death. But he gave their life over to the plague and destroyed all the firstborn in Egypt, the first of their strength in the tents of Ham.